I hope what will emerge is that now that we have a pretty solid grounding in the lumdus of Yechneiva L'Sifei Michshol, which is itself a hugely practical issue, as we try to look at some of the considerations that come up, we can see how they emerge from that discussion. And there are, of course, many, many ways in which this can affect our lives. This is a particularly widespread kind of concept, so part of the whole chap of being a klolistic idea that can attach to many different yisurim is that it has the potential to crop up almost everywhere, and indeed it does. So the practical implications are very significant, so let's try to get a sense of how some of the details might be affected and what kind of questions Poskim would talk about. So one question, which is a very major issue, which really comes directly out of discussions that we've had so far, has to do with the following, and I hope you've had a chance to see some of the Marmar Komos have pointed in the direction of this issue. What would happen if the Isser that you're dealing with is an Isser Drabbana? It's a rabbinical prohibition. Is that a violation of Lifnei? We're showing him talk about this. If you saw, there were a couple of Tosfos in all over the place, where Tosfos seems to take the view, even when talking about Yisurim Derabbanan, that Lifnei is a concern. While if you saw, for example, the Ramban in the Avodah Zarah and Daf Beis, he seems to take it for granted that the Ramban, Nachmanides, that dealing with an Isser Drabbanan, we don't have an Isser of Lifneiva. And the truth is, if you think about it, just on the surface, regardless of what the specific Rishonim say, you could probably identify at least, and we could subdivide it further, but at least three different positions one could take on this issue. Anyone want to help me out? What are the three different positions one could take on this question? If I help somebody violate an Isser Drabbanan, I am, Jonathan?
You can say that you're helping them be over this in the race of Lo Sosra.
Yes, so you're going already into a whole other element of the discussion. Besides what they're doing, let's talk about first what are the possibilities in terms of how to categorize what I'm doing.
You're over the Raisa Drabbanan.
Okay, so I could be over the Raisa. I could be over the Drabbanan. What else? What's the third possibility?
Nothing.
Could be over nothing. Right, maybe there is no Lifnei in such a context. So let's consider that question for a minute in light of what we've seen so far. So let's start, first of all, with the question, let's assume I am in violation of something. Right, and Tosfos seem to work off that assumption, and many others do as well. So what would be the logic to say that it's either Daraisa or Drabbanan? And this is a point that really very closely adheres to our discussion so far, Aaron.
So if it's like an accessory, so it's almost as if you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So since he's only over Derabanan, so he can't be higher level than he is.
Okay, right, that's definitely one possibility. And you want to spell out the other possibility, or? All right, well, let's focus on that side for a second, because the other side is worthy of discussion as well. That it seems like we should, if we take the accessory point of view, that you are constrained to what the Avarian is doing. If the Avarian is violating a Drabbanan, so you're violating a Drabbanan, maximum. But to say you're violating a Daraisa, that would seem to fly in the face of what we've mentioned till now, the idea of Shelo Yehei Tofel Chomer Min HaIkar. Right, how could it be that you're helping him and he's in violation of a lower level prohibition than you are? It's hard to believe. So it's a little bit in the camp with the Emunah Shmuel to take this view, but it's much less of a Chiddush than the Emunah Shmuel. Right, this you don't have to go so far as the Emunah Shmuel. But you could say that if the whole notion is a broad accessory idea, then I am a partner in his crime. And his crime is an Aveira Drabbanan. So when we say with Neivir Drabbanan, We don't have to say that Chazal made a takana of a new Isser of Lifnei Iver that's relevant to their Isser. What we mean is that Lifnei Iver is a broad concept of accessory. It doesn't even have to be looked at as a separate mitzvah. And therefore it means that I'm partnering whatever that guy's doing. And in this case, it's the Rabbanan, so I am transgressing Divrei Chazal as well. Michael?
Does the Isser Rabbanan of Misayeya stack? In other words, when the other guy's filing a Doraita,
mm-hmm.
are you over both an Isser Doraita of Lifnei Iver, if it is a Doraita, and a Durabanan of Misayeya? And in this case, if he's over a Durabanan, are you over two Durabanans, one of Lifnei Iver and one of Misayeya?
Yes, that's a fair question in general. It happens to be, parenthetically, that the Prima Gaudium maintains that, separate from this whole discussion, that by a Drabbanan there's no Isser Misayeya. That if you have all those elements together, that the Isser is Drabbanan, and you are not crucial to the process, then he maintained that there's no Isser. But your question is actually well taken just by itself, is that do we look at Misayeya really separately? Maybe we should say that until now we've only mentioned Misayeya in the sense to say that even if you're not violating Lifnei Iver Min HaTorah, it's still Misayeya. But the truth is, you could say that even if you are violating Lifnei Iver Min HaTorah, maybe Misayeya is completely a separate thread. And maybe especially if you understand Misayeya as correlating with Tochacha, so maybe I'm doing two things wrong. Which itself is an interesting question. Not 100% clear if there'll be much of an afkamina, but it's an interesting question to consider. So that first point that Aaron was saying is that if you want to maintain that you have an accessory idea, so then you could maintain that you're going to be a subject to only the level of Isser that you're helping out. So if you're helping out a Drabbanan, so you should be a Drabbanan as well. Now, how could you say, no, you're obligated, you're violating a Daraisa? Aaron?
I mean, you could even say within the accessory model possible that only it could be Daraisa.
You could say within what, sorry?
It's even possible to say within the accessory model that even if he's over Drabbanan, he can be over Daraisa.
Within the accessory model?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I mean, as we said before, it's not that you're actually going to get the punishment of him.
Right.
In fact, if he does it, if you're integral to his sin, so I mean, it just happened to be a Durabana, but the concept of with neighbor is you're disadvantaging somebody and making him sin against Hashem. So, Hashem, I see, Lo Sasser,
so I think that's all very valid, it's just probably not the accessory model, that's the other model. Right? That if you say that, and there definitely is room to say like that, right? If you want to say that the Isser is the whole one pasuk model, that everything is all one idea, that's about tripping somebody up, then that's where you could come to the conclusion that that's an Isser Daraisa. Now, Jonathan introduced a whole other issue into this, which is going to take us too far afield to really do proper justice to, but that what really is the category when somebody is violating an Isser Darabanan, so why don't we always say he's violating a Daraisa because of the Daraisa of Lo Sasser? So it's a fair question, but the question comes up every time you distinguish between Daraisas and Drabbanans, and it'll take us far afield to go into it in too much detail. But we know that on some level we distinguish, even though that question is always in the background. So whatever level we're ready to distinguish, we'll carry that over here. So if we say there's a concept of violating a Drabbanan without calling it a Daraisa at the same time, so what would we say about that associate of such a person? So it seems to be that it largely correlates to what we've said so far very closely. That if it's an accessory idea, you're violating a Drabbanan. While if it's a tripping somebody up in Adam L'Chavero, then that leaves the room to say you're in violation of a Daraisa, even though he's only violating a Drabbanan. And indeed, the Minchas Chinuch asked the same question Reb Chaim Moser asked on the Emunah Shmuel. How could you say that somebody is not in violation of Lifnei Iver regarding a Drabbanan? Why don't we say that it's no worse than an Eitz HaRa? No worse than bad advice. So here you could take a similar approach, like Reb Chaim Moser said, and say, you're right, in a Hanami, maybe we'll distinguish between Shogeg and Mezid. It all depends on how you understand the relationship between these concepts. But maybe you'll say the same kind of approach, like we said yesterday, about when you're not subject to the issur. That maybe if it's an issur drabanan, so if the guy doesn't know, so then you're right, it's bad advice. And if he does know, so then you have the chiddush of the accessory pshat, but then that means you're only as liable as he is. So the question of whether the daraisa that you're in violation of, the lifnei iver that you're in violation of, is daraisa drabanan, if we just want to stop the conversation there, it really flows very closely out of what we've said so far. It's a very straightforward next step. Let's complicate things a little bit. Is there a case to be made that it's not lifnei iver at all? That helping somebody do an issur derabanan is not going to be at all a issur of lifnei iver. What do you think about that? Sounds like it from the Ramban. I mean, he wasn't worried about lifnei iver in this context. So you could put together a couple of different possibilities. There are those who want to say that it's not an issur lifnei iver at all, based on the position of the nesivus. I don't know if we've discussed it this year at all. We talked about the comments of the nesivus by issur derabanan. Does that come up this year at all? Last year in Shabbos it probably came up. But essentially the nesivus says the following. I say says in quotes because it's a little complicated what he actually says and how much of it is interpretation. But for our purposes, let's assume the following is the nesivus' position. The nesivus is in the Reish Lamed Dalet, is associated with the following idea. There is a core conceptual difference between an Issur D'Oraisa and an Issur D'Rabbanan. That an Issur D'Oraisa, that is an Issur Chefta. If you're going to eat pork, you're going to eat something that's a violation of Torah law, you have consumed an Issur Chefta. The item is inherently spiritually damaged. But something that's only asur midrabbanan, that doesn't have a status of the object itself. Why? What's that based on? Just to say it in the shortest possible way. If we assume that Chazal have authority over us to tell us what to do. So, okay, we have to listen to them. They tell us not to eat a chicken cheeseburger. So we're obligated to stay away. But they don't change the nature of the chicken cheeseburger. If it was neutral before they came along, if it was spiritually nothing one way or another, so then they don't have any authority over food. They have authority over us. They can tell us to stay away from the food. But there's no reason why the food is going to change its spiritual nature because the rabbis ostered it. Hi.
Is neutral, like if the person, if you know that the person is making an attempt to, let's say, stay away from the burger, but they're still neutral in a way? Does that make sense? Or
well,
but they would ideally not like it.
Well, I mean, neutral, not so much in terms of what they want, in terms of whether the object has any inherent status to it. So, like, for example, we could say that pork is bad. God wrote the Torah and God made the world and God told us to stay away from it. So we could say that he infused pork with spiritual negativity. But something that was mutter until the rabbis came along and prohibited it. So what gives that its inherent negativity? Maybe nothing. Maybe it's just that the rabbis have authority over us. They can tell us what to do. So we shouldn't eat a chicken cheeseburger. But it doesn't have any inherent status to it. So based on that, there were those who wanted to say that maybe you have an issur derabanan, you're not going to be in violation of lifnei iver. Why not? Can you fill in the blanks now based on this idea? It kind of opens up a new avenue of thought. Jonathan?
If we say it's about mitzdarif, so the idea would be that the rabbanan don't want you to do this maisa, So if it's you're not the one actually doing it, you're just causing the person to do it, so then if the whole idea isn't that it'll happen, rather, you should not do this mitzvah, so you didn't do the mitzvah.
But you enabled the mitzvah.
But you didn't do it, and we're saying here that because it's only on the gavra, since you didn't exactly do it, so that's why you would say from the sivos that it wouldn't be no issue.
Maybe. I'm not sure if that's so compelling, though, because the action, you still partook in the action. I'm actually not necessarily thinking of correlating this particular question to the central chakira, maybe. But I don't know if that particular way of saying it is 100% mochir. Aaron?
So that's where I took my hand up. But do we consider that the sinner, the chafza, maybe there's no because Chazal there's an inherent iser in tripping someone up.
I know where you're going with it. The question is not necessarily substantiated enough. Right. Like what you want to say is that if we assume the whole thing was an iser drabanan, that it would require, let's say, an independent takana drabanan, so then maybe Chazal didn't make such a takana. But I don't know if we necessarily see that. We could say that according to either possibility, we don't really require a separate takana, either that the concept means that you join in whatever action happens, and then even on a level of the Rabbanan, maybe that's true, or it means you're tripping the guy up, in which case, for sure, we don't need a special takana in order to recognize that here. So, right, so I think what we see here, actually, is that we can open up a whole other avenue of exploration. But yesterday we spent some time trying to categorize what we find in the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Lifnei iver lo sitein michshol." So we saw yesterday that maybe we have to figure out a little bit what an iver is. What does it take to be considered blind spiritually? And should we distinguish between a shogeg and a mezid, etc., etc.? Should we distinguish between a mummer, etc.? So maybe it's also worth asking, what is a michshol? Does a michshol have to have some inherent significance to it, something negative about it? Or is it enough that you can do the aveira with this regardless of what its inherent status is? As we said yesterday, you know, everything could be called a michshol. Right? There's no item in the world that you can't do some aveira with. So at what point does something rise to the threshold of being called a michshol? So maybe one could argue that when you're dealing with an eser d'oraisa, so you have objects that have negativity associated with it. And that an eiver menachai perhaps is a chefza shel eser. And maybe michshol means chefza shel eser. But if you have an issur d'rabbanan, which essentially just means Chazal told you not to relate to a neutral item in a certain way, so maybe that's not called a michshol for our purposes.
Getting into the nitty-gritty of how you would be with his neighbor, maybe giving someone a coupon for the Eber Minachai
store. Yeah, that's quite a story.
There's no chafts of the rest of issur there.
Right, so it's an interesting question. And once we follow this path, if we do want to follow this path, which I'm not sure if it's the only way to go, but if you want to follow this path, are we then going to really limit what's called the lifnei iver, maybe?
I mean, you know, or at what point does the mishal even come into play? Because the mishal could be anything, you know, if you're...
Right. So maybe we will find ourselves somewhat limited. And all other kinds of questions can open up based on that. Aaron?
I mean, the problem with Pasuk with this explanation is that the Pasuk says lo sitei michshol. It's an action. So therefore, even if you're not giving him a chefza shel iser, you're putting the person in a position where he can be over an iser d'rabbanan.
Yeah, but the action part is you're doing an action with a chefza. Right? Lo sitei action, michshol, chefza. So the question is, what qualifies as a michshol? Maybe there is a threshold in order for something to be considered. Now, once you want to consider this question, so we said before that this doesn't necessarily have to tie into the original chakira, but now we can consider the original chakira again for a second. Maybe if you believe that it's all about accessory. Somebody commits an avera, you enabled the avera. That's your problem. So then, all right, maybe we have a broader path to that conclusion. But if we're going to say that this is all one idea of the pasuk, and the pasuk prohibits putting a stumbling block in front of someone, and focuses on the act of the nesinas michshol, then it really is fair game, especially because we're going to assume you violate the isser at that point. So we really should have a certain threshold for what's called a michshol. And maybe chefza shel isser, not chefza shel isser, and maybe that's a reasonable place to consider the question. There are those who want to take this one step further, and they want to say, it's really an interesting point, right? Until now we've said that if the guy is a shogeg, so you're more likely to violate lifnei iver, because you'll violate what we called yesterday lifnei iver b, of bad advice. But there's also a svara to say that when it comes to the drabbanan, then maybe the shogeg should be less of a problem. Why? Because that's actually an extension of the nesivus. That's also part of what they associate with the nesivus' position. The whole context of when the nesivus says there is no chefza shel iser for a drabbanan. So the context, the way it's, again, I'm speaking in vague terms because the nesivus doesn't exactly say all this. It's part of how he's interpreted in the later svarim. That's why I'm speaking a little bit vaguely about it. But essentially, the point in that context is that we know that when you violate Nisar Doraisa, Bishogeg, so you're not punished, but there are consequences. Sometimes there's a korban, there's a kapara, there's a need to wipe out the spiritual stain because you violated an avera even though you didn't purposely do it. However, based on this nesivus, they say that if you violated Nisar Drabanan, Bishogeg, then maybe that doesn't even need any kind of a kapara at all. Why? Because if you have a daraisa, so then the object is bad. You ate something bad. You didn't do it on purpose. We're not going to punish you. But there's a spiritual stain there that needs to be fixed. If you ate nisadrabana, so explain, if you ate nisadrabana, the shogeg, you could say, drabanan, that the object itself is not bad. There's just a prohibition. You can't rebel against the rabbis and ignore their instruction not to eat it. But you didn't rebel. You didn't know that it was being violated. You were a shogeg. So maybe if there's no rebellion against Chazal, maybe nothing happened. Maybe there's nothing to even take note of. So therefore, you could argue that in such a case, if you gave somebody nisa drabanan b'shogeg, that person didn't even stumble. And then maybe you're not going to be able to call that a michshol in any sense of the word. So that's all an interesting idea. Aaron, can I cut you off before?
No, I'm sorry. I'm just kidding.
No.
I'm not following. But are you saying that
that maybe we have a threshold for what's called a michshol. In order to violate the iver l'siten michshol, it has to have some inherent michshol status. And then maybe we can apply to that this distinction between Doraisas and Drabanans that the Nesivus is connected to, that Doraisas have a dead status, and Drabanans, the object, is neutral. It's just that we have to listen to the rabbis not to use it, not to eat it. So therefore, that we can't call this a bad item. It's a neutral item. And maybe a michshol has to be a bad item.
So a threshold for what defines a michshol,
right,
is something.
Maybe. It's a possible threshold. You could argue on it, but it's a good candidate for a threshold. One who might want to draw the line over there, there's a logic to it.
So So how did it, can you explain again how that doesn't work for what it means that a shogi for a darbana did?
Right. So when you deal with a shogi, so what the nesiv, this is basic position, is that if one violates the nesiv rabbana of the shogi, there's no impact whatsoever. There's no consequences whatsoever. So why should that be? Because a daraisa, if you violate a pishogi, the consequences are that you had some iser. You had some avera take place. You didn't intentionally do it, so you're not punished. But there's a kapara, because there's still something needs to be fixed, because you interacted with this spiritual poison. But when you're dealing with a darabana, there is no spiritual poison. There's nothing bad about this item. It's just the rabbi said, don't eat it. And therefore, what you do wrong when you violated the rabbanan is you rebelled against the rabbis. But if you didn't rebel because you didn't know in the first place that it was there, so then maybe there's nothing. Mashal mahadav doma, right? Let's say your parents tell you not to eat certain cookies, right? And tell you, there's two different things they tell you not to eat. One thing they tell you not to eat because it's poison. It'll make you very sick right away. And one thing they tell you not to eat because it's a special treat and they want you to earn it. So you have to deserve it, and they don't want you to eat it until you're properly deserve it. So let's say the kid doesn't realize that he's eating this item the father told him not to eat, and he accidentally eats it, one of these two items. It gets mixed in with his food, he doesn't realize. So he does it totally innocently. Will the mother be upset? What do you think?
He dies.
Well, so if it's the first
it's
one, if it's the poison, she's going to say, all right, it's not your fault, but let's get to the hospital right now. Right, because he just ate poison. But if it was the second one, where the food is fine, just she was telling him he shouldn't eat it before he's earned the treat. Alright, so there's nothing, he didn't do anything wrong. There's nothing bad about him eating this item. It's only that he's not supposed to ignore the parents' instructions. And he didn't ignore the parents' instructions. He didn't know. So, in all contexts of life, there are different rules. Sometimes the rule is important, because you shouldn't break the rule, that itself is an issue. And if it was an accident, if it was inadvertent, we can ignore it. And sometimes the rule has certain real-world consequences that it doesn't make a difference that you didn't intend to do it, we still have to deal with the consequences. So in the Nesivus' position, that's the difference between Daraisas and Drabanans. And therefore, a Drabanan, if you do it inadvertently, there's no consequences. The only thing would have been wrong would have been defying the rule, and you didn't defy the rule, so there isn't anything to worry about after the fact. So therefore, perhaps if you're machshil somebody in such a way, so maybe that's not called lifnei iver. Maybe that's not called either a michshol or an aveira that you could connect to in any sense of the word. So essentially, that gives us basically four different halachic positions regarding nisa d'rabbanan. It could be that you're in violation of the machshil, in violation of lifnei iver meh Torah. Basically, if we take the one pasuk pshat, it could be that he's in violation of lifnei iver midrabanan. We take the accessory pshat, or it could be that he's not in violation of lifnei iver at all. Maybe if we focus on the definition of michshol. And we say that the Rabbanan doesn't rise to the level of a Michshol. Or maybe it'll depend whether the Rabbanan was B'mezer or B'shogeg, because maybe when it's B'shogeg especially, we can write this whole thing out of existence as if it never really happened. And this, by the way, there's a parallel to this yesterday. We talked about if a Ben Noach was B'shogeg and you were Machshol Ben Noach B'shogeg, that there was a view that some had that wasn't Lifnei Iver. Based on the Rambam's language, or the Rambam sounds like a Ben Noach who violates one of his averus b'shogeg, it's as if nothing happened, and since it's not punished, so therefore it's as if it was nothing. So the same kind of idea here, that even though shogeg, when you're dealing with a nisr deraisa for a Jew, so then that's considered to be all the more so with neighbor because of bad advice. But here, it's only bad advice if it hurts you, if it doesn't have any impact, so it's not bad advice. And therefore, paradoxically, in this context, maybe when it comes to shogeg, there's more of a reason to exclude it from the issue. This is a very complex lumdish discussion, but as you can imagine, this has huge nafkaminas for halacha lemaisa. And part of it is because many of the isurim that you might find yourself confronted with, and we'll discuss the most common scenario in a minute, many of them are isurim d'rabbanan. And therefore the question of whether or not lifnei iver is going to apply is going to be hugely consequential. So this is a very, very important issue, halacha l'maisa. And maybe we'll have to figure out the time, how much time. We may spill over a little bit into Monday, so maybe we'll introduce this issue and we'll talk a little bit about some of the consequences, and we'll bring up some of the other issues, some of the other practical issues we'll push off for Monday. But one of the most common issues, and if you saw, I put it on the Marmot Homos, it's one that was discussed in Shulchan Aruch already, but it's a very, very relevant issue for anybody who deals at all with people who are not observant, and would make life very difficult if we're very worried about this issue, is what about providing food to someone who is A, not going to wash on bread, let's say, or B, not going to make a bracha? So that's an issue the Shulchan Aruch already raised a concern about. In practice, so what would you say about that? Now obviously that makes it very, very difficult to interact at all with people who are not observant, or certainly to have them over for a meal, but also there are many other contexts in which you don't have to have someone over for a full-blown meal in order to provide them with a bite to eat. And what do you do about this question? Jonathan?
Well, the example with bread, that would be much more problematic because benching would be d'oraisa.
So yes and no. So you're right that the benching puts it on a level of d'oraisa, which is more of an issue. But that also provokes another question, which is an issue that many poskim brought up. So if a person is mevatel an aseh, is that considered to be a lifnei iver? This was just touched upon a little bit yesterday.
Yeah, isn't that possibly maybe lifnei or something? Because I mean, specifically, you're not making him eat a kazayas. You're not making him be.
Well, I don't know if we call lifnei to lifnei. I think the fact that it's essentially something that's going to come up later is a little bit relevant. And there are other issues that we could also throw into the mix. Again, we'll see how many we can come up with today. But there is what to look at when we focus on benching as kind of being after the fact. There probably are some other nuances we could throw into the equation. So first of all, benching is a deraisa, it's true. But all of these are really isurei aseh, there are consequences of aseh. So that itself is also a room to be mistapek. Now that suffix about whether or not a bitul aseh is included in lifnei iver, so that also could probably plug into our question of today. How do you define a michshol? Is it possible to define a michshol as a lack of goodness rather than active badness? Now, a michshol literally would mean somebody trips. So if somebody just doesn't get up, so to speak, is that called a michshol? Is there something in the very thrust of the pasuk that would have to convey that you're actively doing something wrong rather than failing to do something right? Now another whole branch one could take up, and we won't get into in the interest of time, is the question of the Gemara has a language that eating without a bracha is like stealing, is ke'ilu mal. So there is a pretty significant literature. Do you really mean it like that? Are you really saying that there's some avera specifically in eating without a bracha? Or is it really an avera that just reflects the chi of aseh, which we assume is drabbanim? So you have a couple of issues here that when it comes to this question specifically, so the fact that it is probably a chiyuv drabanan. So brachos generally we relate to as chiyuv drabanan, and washing also is a chiyuv drabanan. So that's one element that should help us, and that's an element that Rav Moshe Sternbuch, for example, in his tshuvas gave great weight to. But others disagree, like in the tshuvas Minchas David, for example. So he assumes, like the other way, that even if the Isser itself is Drabanan, being machshel someone is a Daraisa. So if that's the case, maybe it shouldn't make a difference. But if you don't want to say like that, if you want to say the accessory idea or any other reason to be makel for a Drabanan, so that's going to be a major element of the equation. The fact that brachos with Drabanan, that washing is Drabanan, that's going to have a major impact on the discussion.
This doesn't make a difference in terms of whether that's a kind of a shogeg or it's an exnishbag.
Right, so then you can get into other things. That if we want to now make a shogeg a big factor, especially a shogeg drabanan, so then what rises to the threshold of shogeg is also a very fair question to ask. So you already have a couple of sniffing that are going to pile up into this equation, a couple of reasons why there are very significant reasons to we note the lahakel on this question. And a couple of other reasons that we'll discuss as well. Just want to note, some of them we'll add today, some of them we'll add maybe on Monday, but before moving too far from this topic, so there is a very important tshuva of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. And his tshuva is Mincha Shlomo. So he has a very important yesod, which you should not ignore, that we have to recognize that there's Lifnei Iver with a lowercase lamin and there's Lifnei Iver with an uppercase lamin. And he says, let's say, imagine the scenario, you're in Israel in the middle of the summer, a very hot day, and you have this worker who's not observant working in your house, and he's been out in the sun 10 hours slaving away in your garden and building your house in the hot sun. And he comes in and he says, I'm about to collapse. Give me a drink of water. And you're thinking, you're sitting there on the inside of the air-conditioned house, you've got this huge pitcher of ice water on the table and big buckets of ice cream that you've been enjoying with your family, and this guy is about to collapse. He's been working in your backyard for the past 10 hours in the sun. He says, please give me a drink. So if you're going to think to yourself, well, I can't give him a drink because he's not going to make a bracha, and I'll violate Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mitchell. So what do you think the impact will be?
He will die.
He will die, right? Let's assume that he actually survives the experience. He doesn't die. So in terms of your sense of responsibility for spiritual well-being, what do you think the impact will be? So as hopefully we shouldn't need Shlomo Zalman to point out to us, we could realize this on our own, that you're looking with a very small set of eyes rather than the big set of eyes. And yes, you may have saved him from this momentary drinking water without a bracha, but you can also guarantee that he will leave your house thinking that from Jews are the meanest, cruelest, worst type of people that are around, and there's no way he's ever going to want to be like one of them. So one certainly has to be able to think with a larger perspective and to realize that maybe, yes, in the local arena, maybe there's a concerted with Nehidra, but if you're going to present a picture to somebody that you're completely insensitive and not willing to share a drink of water with a dying man, basically, as Rambam put it, so you're not going to really do much for the cause of enhancing his observance, and that's a much more pressing consideration. So that's not only compelling, hopefully that's self-evident, and that's something that cannot be underemphasized. So the example we gave is a little more of a dramatic example, but you could imagine many other examples that are less dramatic, and also just a whole broader picture. So certainly if one wants to invite somebody so that they're going to have a stronger bond of friendship and you're going to enhance their spirituality overall. So the concern for the more local violations of eating without a bracha don't seem to weigh up, don't seem to rise to the level of significance you're going to accomplish by having them over in the first place. That gets into a much more complicated question. The major machlokas haposkim that we're talking about, let's say, not making a bracha, but a full Shabbos of somebody driving Friday night and the like, but that there are also major stadim l'hakel, even though not everyone agreed, but Rav Schechter has maintained that as long as you provide the opportunity to come to your house without violating a melacha, you invite the person for all of Shabbos, for example, and they say, thanks anyway, but I'll just come for dinner, which means they're going to be driving. So then as long as you're not forcing them to do it that way, so Rav Schechter felt, not everyone agreed, but Rav Schechter felt that that was not going to be considered lifnei iver. And again, the assumption that there's what to gain from such an invitation is going to outweigh whatever other costs may be involved. And of course, also when you're dealing with, you know, let's move away a little bit from the dramatic example of the guy about to faint in your backyard, but if you're not dealing with a guy who needs you for his only drink of water, so in most cases, the people who you're giving food to have many, many opportunities throughout the day to eat. This is really a chad avar denara situation. So chances are, even if it was a daraisa, you're not really dealing with lifnei iver daraisa. You're dealing with misayaya. And of course, once you knock it down to a derabanan, so you have many more grounds to makel anyway. And of course, if the iser itself is an iser derabanan, such as not making a bracha or not washing or the like, so then we already said, we mentioned before from the Prima Gaudium, that there isn't a misayaya when the iser itself is derabanan. But even without that, so you have already a derabanan on top of a derabanan, so you have many sniffing many very significant grounds upon which to be made.
I mean, could you say that
melacha
is the same thing? That a person, just like a person always has the opportunity to eat, if a person doesn't come to a Shabbos meal, what are they going to be doing?
I think there's a lot of truth to that. You know, again, the question of how technical you're going to be about it, but strictly speaking, the person who's not going to come to your house, or if they're going to be in the golf court in the movie theater instead, so it's not like you're creating any more malachos in their life. You know, it's a question just how directly you're involved in a specific malacha. But overall, they're going to be doing fewer malachos, not only after they come to your house and they become firm for the rest of their lives, for sure they'll be doing fewer malachos, but even that night, that they presumably would be doing other malachos and they're going to come to your house. So that's probably not, it's a fair question to ask in general, whether, and again, there are those from Machmir on this question, but whether it's even lifnei iver is the right terminology here, because if you invite someone to drive to your house, invite someone to your house, and they're going to end up driving, right? So first of all, they could walk maybe, but you know, in some cases it's not realistic that that's going to happen. The more relevant answer is they could stay at your house. That's what you're providing that option. You know, if they're not willing to stay at your house, they're probably not going to say no. I'll walk the 5 hours from wherever I am. It's a question of what's realistic, but the issue is also, that's not necessarily lifnei iver in the sense that we're talking about. They have every ability to do the aveira without you. It's just you're giving them a reason to. So it's a question of just how, it's not really lifnei iver in the technical sense. You're not actually enabling the issue. Rav Moshe, when he talks about this, mentions consideration of mesis. And mesis, when you entice somebody to avodah zarah, you entice somebody to sin. So it's not so much that you're making the aveira possible, it's that you're taking on some responsibility for the situation, that they are motivated to do it because of you. So then it's a fair question to ask, well, what would they do without you? So what exactly is the alternative? And then again, there is a fair case to be made that there is a major tzad lahakel in this question.
But are you still need to extend the offer to stay over?
Yeah, it's still appropriate to extend it because you're still, again, part of this responsibility is that you want to minimize the transgressions that are happening. So if you can get them to stay over, so then for sure you're going to be better off. So that's clearly going to be the lachatchila. Now, maybe your question is if it's absolutely impossible for you to do that. So we say that you can't extend the invitation. So you could still make a svara lahakel, but you'd be on weaker ground. So if you at least create the scenario where, as far as you're concerned, if they accept your invitation 100%, then that can be Mechal Shabbos. So then the fact that they decide to do it in a way where they will be Mechal Shabbos has moved farther away from your responsibility. I think the other Aaron had a question.
So according to this, you can invite them to Shabbos lunch?
No, because you can invite them to sleep over Friday night. You can say,
it's sort of unrealistic.
But again, the question is how much does realistic matter? You know, that if they're going to be violating more malachas the other way or equal malachas the other way, so it's not so clear how much it's your responsibility. So essentially, you want to create a scenario where you have the opportunity to negate all their errors. So you say, listen, I want you to come for lunch. And in order for you to come for lunch, I know you live far away, so we'll be happy to have you to come for the entire Shabbos, and we'll provide a bed for you.
And then the guy says, okay?
Right, so the guy says, well, thank you anyway, but I'm just going to come for lunch. So then, based on this svara, again, not everyone agrees, but based on this svara, so then at least you have them for lunch. So these are some of the elements that go into some of those questions. Again, the bracha issue is one that's already discussed in the Shulchan Aruch. You're dealing with lower level issues. So it does seem that even though there are those who are machmir, and the Shulchan Aruch raised the issue as well. So Shulchan Aruch says it's not roi to feed somebody who's not going to make a bracha because you have to worry about the lack of making a bracha. So again, it depends on what the overall considerations are and whether or not there's an actual violation of ne'iver. Some point out that the language of Shulchan Aruch, even though he's discouraging it, is not necessarily reflective of an actual iser of lifnei. And then again, there are many other studim that will also come into play, especially since in most cases you'll also be dealing with a situation of chad avra denara. There are still a number of other practical points that maybe we will have to leave some over for Monday. And I'll just, maybe we'll mention one more point and then we'll try to quickly chad avra talk about and we'll pick up on Monday. That, as we alluded at the very beginning, and this is an issue that the Ad Malachi raises as well. The Ad Malachi, if you recall, he's the sefer of Kol, he's the one who popularized the question of when do you violate the Lifnei Iver? Do you violate it when you give them up? Do you violate it later? So this whole very important detail of Chad Av Denara versus Trey Av Denara, which makes it flip from a Daraisa to a Darabana, can he do it without you or does he need you? So as we alluded to on our first day, it's a little bit of a subjective question because probably everything is really somewhere along the spectrum. That it's unlikely that it's actually literally impossible without you. They probably just have to work harder to find somebody else who will help or have to get up and do it himself. But he probably, in most cases, it's not really impossible in what we would call a trey avra denara situation. And the inverse is also true, that whatever degree you're helping, you're certainly making it happen quicker. So maybe we should say that it's always a deraisa. Because even if you can do it without you, we'll have to wait another minute before you find someone else. So why don't we say it's always going to be a deraisa? So clearly you have a spectrum that's a little bit subjective as to what's going to be one way or the other. The Ad Malachi says that if it's not ready and waiting for him, that's called trey avra denara. That even if he could himself get it and make it ready for him, but he has you bring it to him and make it ready, that's the hagdara of trey avra denara. But again, it's a little bit of a subjective question, and you can see why theoretically anything could be considered either one, depending on how you want to measure it. So that's also an important consideration to keep in mind in terms of some of the practicalities. All right, there are a number of other practical issues, and it's kedai to maybe see some more of the Marma Komos about this. So let's just quickly chazer we spoke about today. So we started off with a very important question, a somewhat complex question, of whether one violates Lifnei Iver if he facilitates an Issa Drabbanan. And as we saw, there were at least three possible answers. He violates Lifnei Iver Daraisa, he violates Lifnei Iver Drabbanan, or he doesn't violate Lifnei Iver at all. Said that if you maintain the accessory idea, it would seem like you're a violation derabanan because you can only be violating what he's violating. While if you hold the one pasuk idea, that it's all one big idea in the pasuk, so then it is theoretically possible that you could violate the derais of tripping somebody up, even though he is only tripped up because of the yisur derabanan. And as Menachas Chinuch raised the question of why don't we say that every yisur derabanan is no worse than bad advice, no less than bad advice, and should also for that reason
parallels the question of the Achiezer that we talked about yesterday, and you can take the same kind of approach and make the same types of distinctions. And then we saw that there were those who said that maybe a Nisa Drabanan should not even be Lifnei Iver at all, based on the Nisivus' idea that Nisa Drabanan doesn't have any inherent status to it. It's a Nisa Gavra, it's a Nisa on the individual, rather than the item being anything bad. And maybe we say, Lo Sitei Michshol, maybe we have to define something objectively as a Michshol. We have some threshold, we have to figure out how it's going to rank in terms of that consideration. And taking that one step further, that same idea, there are those who say that maybe if the Yisid Rabbanan has violated the Shogeg, so then maybe the Machshir really did nothing. And maybe that's not such a consideration. So as we noted, this is a hugely practical consideration that comes up for a lot of questions. Among them, the question of feeding somebody when they're not going to make a bracha or they're not going to wash. It's an issue already raised by the Shulchan Aruch. So that theoretically you have a potential with Neiver, but as we mentioned, there are many, many spells in Lahakil. The fact that you're dealing with Rabbanans, the fact that you're dealing with a Bitul Aseh, we talked a little bit about the major discussion that exists. What does the Gemara mean when it says that somebody who eats without a bracha is violating Gzela on some level? Is that literal or not? That's a major discussion itself. So the fact that we're dealing with Rabbanans and Aseh, and presumably also Harav Danara, where they could violate the same Nisa without you. So all of those are very relevant to Smith and Lahakel, together also with Rosh Hashanah Zalman's very important point, that if you turn somebody off Torah Judaism with your behavior, so that's a much bigger Lifnei Iver than the specific eating without a bracha they're going to do right now. And that itself is as important a consideration as anything else. And then we talked also about if the Isser is more serious, like an Isser of Chil Shabbos, so it becomes more complicated a little bit, and it's a major machlokas haposkim. But there as well, there are stuff in Lahakel. We mentioned that Rosh Hashanah was making on this. If you at least provide the opportunity for the person not to do Mechal Shabbos, even if they don't choose to take you up on that specific form of the Isser. And we discussed whether is it really with Neiver or is it really something else, because you're not enabling the Aveira. First of all, maybe they'll do fewer Averas because maybe they'll be driving elsewhere, but also, either way, it's not about enabling it as much as you're giving a reason for it, and maybe that also is outweighed by the other considerations. And then we talked about how this crucial element of Charav Denaro, which regulates whether it's an Issa D'Raisa or an Issa D'Rabbanan, a very important halachic detail, at the same time seems to be kind of subjective, and that everything could be at one end of the spectrum or the other, depending on how you want to measure it. And we just mentioned to that extent the Ad Malachi, who defines Treyav Denara as any situation where the Issa that he wants is not ready and waiting for him, and he needs you to prepare it. That's already called Treyav Denara, despite the whole subjective nature of how these things could be defined. Any questions about any of this? Okay, so then I guess our agenda is tomorrow will be a normal Parsha day, Sunday will be a normal Bechir's day, and then Monday we'll try to finish this up and get up to...